Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon. Coffee Talk Radio shows are part of the Coffee Party Be the Media project. You can join our team at www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer. Well, there was ice in the birdbath today here in the foothills, the Oregon Coast Range. How are things in Portland, my dear?
They are good, except I accidentally, there's a music going off. I was going, what happened? Things are great up here, frozen as well, dog park, all the mud's frozen. It's kind of nicer to walk on, but it's a little chilly and not bad for end of November.
Yes, yes. And a good day to take a nice cool walk after the show, because I promise you I'm a little hot about what we're talking about today. And so it'll be nice to have that sunny, crisp walk through the forest. Let's get right to it, shall we? We've called our show today The Transpartisan Nation, Part 1. And that's because Debbie Lynn and I want to talk to you about why we think transpartisan thinking outside the red, blue, green, purple, rainbow box is needed in today's political world. I'm sure we'll also talk about how hard that can be, eh, Debbie Lynn?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So if you want to be part of the conversation and you're streaming but want to talk, you can go to 646-929-2495. Or if you're streaming, you can participate in the chat room, which is being monitored faithfully by Debbie Lynn. Or you can comment at either www.coffeepartyusa.com at our blog spot, the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page, or the Join the Coffee Party Movement Facebook page, because obviously it's not a conversation without you. And as always, our green rules are simple. Ding, ding, ding. That's either me or Debbie Lynn asking you to find another way to make your point that does not rob anyone of their dignity. So with that, I think we're good to start. And I think I'll open with a little bit from the blog post. So I have been confronted with the question of transpartisanship this week as I found myself drawn to news stories about the Reclaim America Now rally in Washington, D.C. on November 19th. And rally organizer Larry Klayman, he's the founder of Judicial Watch, Freedom Watch, and now the Reclaim America Now Coalition. The rally press release really brought my eye to the page. It claimed to be providing a new American Independence Day and called for a peaceful, nonviolent second American Revolution. I was very curious about this. My research took me to some mental roadblocks very quickly. Mr. Klayman, Larry, and his several organizations clearly challenge our government to account for itself, something I do support, and many of you, our listeners and callers, have supported as well. But the devil is in the details. We do not agree on the cause of failure of our elected to represent we the people. I blame the corrupting effects of money and politics, and he blames the Obama administration. I couldn't find a common cause between the two of us. It didn't take long to identify barriers to communication between folks like Mr. Klayman and me. There were just too many code words, too many talking points, and they all supported a narrative that I'm not sure either one of us might be able to transcend. And yet, isn't that exactly what needs to happen if we're ever going to pull off the citizen intervention required to put this republic's democracy back on track? There are many who believe we can do this and that we must do this. Annabelle Park inspired the coffee party by posting comments on her Facebook page 2010, saying that we can do better just by talking to one another. The Transpartisan Center's Michael Osterlink, you probably can pronounce that better than me, Debbie Lynn, address this in this video that we have posted on our blog. The list is long and impressive of people who believe this coming together is possible. Assuming that we the people have similar goals, for efficient, responsive, and accountable government, for example? What will it take for us to move beyond the blame game or how we got there and focus on making our shared goal a reality? Can we let go of the point scoring, the win-lose paradigm? Can we trust each other, provide compassion instead of competition, and control our fears long enough to change, to be the change we seek? Are we just so hardwired to our stories that we can't hear one another? I guess that's another way to say the same thing. And so here, we've laid the groundwork for today's conversation. Is transpartisanship necessary? Is it possible? But some things have come up since our blog post was posted. First, a loyal listener asked Evelyn and I to consider talking about the Kennedy assassination. And I have to admit, at first, I was going, But then, his statement was, let's talk about Camelot, then and now. What if JFK had never been shot? Would we be exactly the same place in the world today if JFK had been president through the 68 campaign or not? Yes, no, why? Why not? And interestingly enough, when we talked about this, Debbie Lynn and I agreed that this actually points the way to the conversation we wanted to have today, not the opening we had first considered, but very effective. Partisanship goes deep. The answer to the question goes deep. And all of the things, the place where we begin, begins with that hard wiring. I'll use myself as an example. I never spend time thinking about what it would be like today if JFK's term as president were not cut short by political murder. What I hold in my bones is that these, the 60s, were dangerous and murderous times. And he was one of many, many victims. I've got a list here. I just, you know, in 10 minutes, if you spent 20 minutes, you'd probably expand your list. June 12, 1963, Medgar Evers was assassinated. November 22, 63, John F. Kennedy was assassinated. November 2, 1963, the president of Vietnam, along with his brother and chief political advisor, were assassinated. That had huge consequences on how the conflict in Southeast Asia went. June 21st, 64, three voter registration activists were arrested, released to an ambush, and murdered by the Ku Klux Klan. As a matter of fact, during the 10 weeks of the Freedom Summer, which I believe was 64, it might be 62, four civil rights workers were killed. At least three Mississippi blacks were murdered because of their support of the civil rights movement. Four people were critically wounded. 80 Freedom Summer workers were beaten. 1,062 people were arrested. 37 churches were bombed or burned, and 30 black homes or businesses were bombed or burned. This is the 60s I remember. To top that, between May of 1955 and the Kennedy assassination of 1963, 16 persons called civil rights martyrs by the Southern Poverty Law Center were murdered in racially motivated violence. Five were children. None were white until just months before Kennedy. 24 political murders happened between the assassinations of President Kennedy in 63 and Dr. King in 68. Among those, Malcolm X, 1965. But another, 1967, George Lincoln Rockwell, the leader of the American Nazi Party. June 6th, of course, after Robert F. Kennedy in his very public assassination in California. So allow me to get personal here. For me, there never was a Camelot. There was a popular president with a lovely family that was maligned by the establishment and fell the way of so many who saw a future America that was not a mirror of yester America. Is it any wonder that so many of us children of the 60s rejected the political status quo or the hypocrisy of organized religion that did not do enough to stop this? I get PTSD thinking about the 60s, you guys. It's no small deal. So too. So let's bring this back to the transpartisanship question. And then I'll let Debbie Lynn weigh in because I know she has a lot to say. I ask you all, would have having an open and honest debate back then, if transpartisan kinds of conversations were possible back then, would that have changed the course of history? Can we change the course of history now? All right. I'll be quiet, Debbie Lynn. Share.
And, you know, it was interesting to have Bob ask us to talk about the Kennedy assassination because I wasn't born yet when Kennedy was killed. And so there's all this hoopla going on and stuff on the media. But my parents did live in Mississippi at the time. And they have told me stories about people throwing parties because the president was dead. And that's something that I just have trouble imagining, and it doesn't have the same visceral wiring reaction in me that it does in you, because you know during the 60s, during most of this time of the political murders, you know I was just too young. I didn't know what was going on. And my parents weren't married to each other for very long. In fact, they got divorced shortly thereafter. But I grew up in a mostly conservative libertarian home. And then I spent weekends visiting my dad, who was very liberal. So my first memory of politics was actually the 1972 campaign, where my mom's family, we were Nixon supporters. And that was followed by Nixon's fall and resignation. So
yeah.
I remember watching the daily counts of the lives lost in Vietnam, thinking it was a good day when the count was zero. And I remember living in fear of many of our neighbors in the neighborhood where we lived. There was a lot of motorcycle gang activity and a lot of drugs. There was just assumed that the motorcycle gangs, which were the Hells Angels and the Sons of Silence, but they were running drugs, just assumed. And I was taught to respect authority and to call upon them when I needed protection because I've lived in this unsafe world. So some of the aftermath, I think, of what you experienced, Janine, with what I grew up with was just that knowing that I was inherently unsafe because I couldn't trust the government. I couldn't trust my neighbors. It was just not safe. And yet trust is what makes our country great. If we don't want to live in a police state where we have surveillance as normal, where we have heavy regulations because we can't trust companies to do the right things, we have to regulate them into compliance. That inhibits our ability to have freedom. And freedom is based on trust. And so that is, to me, it gets back to how do we rebuild trust in each other. And that's where transpartisan politics comes in for me. I mean, in an odd way, you know, my parents' divorce was probably the best thing that ever happened to me for politics because I had to learn how to respect and honor vastly different worldviews at a very young age. And I have experienced enough since then, you know, wonderful conversations with people who believe different than I do, that I know we can. If we stop long enough to take the time to build the relationships, it's possible, and that trust can be rebuilt. There is no one that I have ever met that didn't want to leave the world a better place for their kids, have a good strong income or job so that they could provide, say, a safe place and nice place to live. That's everyone's goal. That's what the American dream is. And we get sidetracked or distracted fighting about whose fault it is that it's not that way. And I really, really want to focus on, you know, where are we going? Because the path we're on right now is leading us to a police state and to a complete breakdown in our country. Where I want to go, having a functioning government that serves us, the people, is accountable to us. And us working together and having trust in our neighbors for their intentions. So that's where I want to start playing and talking about.
Well, and I think that's a good place to start. By the way, I want to let you know your microphone's clicking a little bit, so I don't know if
okay.
There's an adjustment you can make. But
I was probably gesturing too much.
I know. It is very difficult for this Italian Scott to not have to hold my hand still, so I get it. Totally. So I do think that kind of your summary is a good place to begin, but I also want to remind the people who are on the call board, raise your hand. You have to press 1 to raise your hand to speak. And anyone in chat who would like to make a comment, Debbie Lynn will relay that comment into our show, and or you can dial in at 646-929-2495. It's interesting that you say, you know, you didn't really grow up trusting. Because, mm-hmm. of course, what I trusted was that these were dangerous and murderous times back then. And mm-hmm. Full disclosure here, I almost giggle when I hear people talk about that now. Not that it's not true now, but I always want to say, where were you 50 years ago? You know? Mm-hmm. But if you're just like you, a lot of these people weren't born.
In the womb.
And then I reveal my senior citizen status, you know, when I say, you know, when I can answer the question, where were you when President Kennedy was killed? But I can also answer the question, where was I when my personal hero, Dr. King, was killed? So the other piece of this, though, that I find very interesting is if we're going to try to have what we call a transpartisan conversation, one that's driven by talking points and by, the code words that just blow my mind. And anyone who doesn't know about code words, please refer to one of our past shows, because to me it is the annihilation of American conversation, code words. And don't we first have to understand ourselves? Because even though I may never trust Larry Klayman, the man whose rally I have followed with great interest, I may never trust him, but I have found my ability to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I don't know which is more powerful, but I know that I can now go to his websites, read his stuff, challenge assumptions perhaps, look and see where he and I part ways. But mm-hmm. but anybody who can say, who can call for a peaceful, nonviolent second American Revolution, seriously, if he means that, as somebody that deserves my ability to at least read what he wrote or listen to what he says with the kind of, what did you call it earlier, the compassion, the interest, you know, that isn't
curiosity.
Yes, honest curiosity is what I've had. Now, like I said earlier, I don't think Larry and I are going to go to any cocktail parties together. I just don't believe that Obama could be the worst president in the world and is not single-handedly responsible for everything wrong with our country. I really believe it's more insidious than that. I really think it's more, as everyone who listens to our show before, money in politics is like the root of all evil for me in this republic's democracy. But that doesn't mean he says everything he says is worth disregarding. And if we were to have a transpartisan conversation, you know, actually sit down with people like him or other groups, the ground rules would be interesting, because it's not don't say what you want to say, but tell me who you are in a way that I can get you, that I can understand who you are. And that's never going to be defined by what you think, you know, I can't describe myself as a person who wants money out of politics. I am more than that. And I just spent 5 minutes telling you, you know, the things in the very formative time of my life that happened that made me look to the world in a particular way in murderous times. And so I think there's a lot of honesty required, you know, that go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, it's having been involved in many of these conversations, both one-on-one and at conferences, there's a level of self-reflection and self-awareness that seems to be kind of required. Because, you know, we have to know what we actually believe, what what are actually our beliefs versus what are the beliefs that have been handed to us by our tribe or by the media or whatever. And that takes a little bit more discernment. I think that's the word I'm looking for. It takes discernment to be able to know, like, what do I actually believe versus the soup that I'm swimming in and not everything I'm surrounded by, because we are impacted by that, just like you were talking, you know, like we were talking about our hardwiring. It is not, that in and of itself is a skill that is needed right now.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, the hardwiring is an interesting thing. I believe that there are moments when it's easier to drop it than other times, right? And I had one of these moments a week ago on one of my Facebook pages where one of the people commenting on my post on Join the Coffee Party Movement Facebook page sort of said, hey, people here are collapsing the distinctions of the Tea Party. And he and I went back and forth a few times because he said something that made me hear him, right? And so we went back and forth and back and forth, and pretty soon I'm getting schooled on the 6 Tea Parties that exist, whether they're related or not. You know, what's the difference between the Tea Party Nation and the Tea Party Express and the Tea Party Patriots and the Tea Party itself and Tea Party militias? And, I mean, and I have probably engaged in 15 hours of research since that man took the time to say to me, I'm not sure you know what you're talking about, but here, you know, and said it in a way that I could engage. And what a gift to me, you know, because I'm shocked at the disparity between different Tea Party organizations. It's not this ubiquitous thing. There's also, and I listed a bunch of them, there's a part of the Tea Party that's over there on the far Christian right, like far Christian right. But there's a lot of Tea Party that's not. And there's, one of the conversations I hope to have at a later show, or if somebody wants to enlighten me now, is just how we've allowed the narrative to make us think that anyone who says they're interested in or a member of a Tea Party falls into a single bucket, because it's become very clear to me that that's not true. Degrees of bucket, maybe, just like I might know degrees of some other bucket, I don't know. But the point is, until we know who we're talking to, until they tell us what they think, their label isn't going to mean anything to us. And it is the labels that we need to transcend if we are going to have a transpartisan conversation. It's not enough to say, oh, I'm not a Democrat or I'm not a Republican, because probably most people know that Debbie Lynn nor I belong to either of those parties, you know. Or even if you say left, right, progressive, conservative. I mean, the truth is, no matter who you are, you're somewhere on that grayscale that goes from black to white. Right? And then there's a place where you stand, and it's based on your values. It's based on your understanding of the world. And in my case, and probably others, it's based on the world in which we grew up. And all of those things are important. Now, can we do this on a national level? Can we do it on a state level? Can we do this on a, my city level or my, you know, the rural fire protection district level?
I was going to say, even in your neighborhood with your neighbors.
Oh, yeah. There's some truth, isn't it? That's probably harder than the rest of it. And, but,
well, it's interesting to actually, you know, sit down and try and talk with folks, especially if you know that they're different than you. I mean, how many families have politics, like, off the table? Like, we just don't talk politics here. And I think that
right.
is such a shame. It is such a rich environment if we can, you know, let go of the blame and actually focus on the future. That makes it a whole different conversation. I mean, I could sit down and talk to this Larry guy, Obama administration for everything, because I would be future focused and saying, well, how are we going to get this? What do we want to do? And really starting to think about what is it that we can do together. As if we have a similar goal, which is to have a peaceful second, American Revolution, you know, regardless of why we think we need it. The thing is we both want to have a government that's accountable to us, the people.
I think that's true. And this is an intellectual do loop that I hope people will chat about or call in about, because it's like this. Okay, we agree. Let's say I agree with someone else about the accountability of government, right, or the responsiveness. Let's just say the responsiveness, whether or not we feel represented by our elected. And then somebody else says, I don't feel represented by my elected. But then their reasons for thinking that are totally different than mine. Can we actually come to a solution? Do we need to hear? I don't doubt that we need to hear each other's reasons, but won't the solution reflect what you think the problem is? So in Mr. Klayman's case, he thinks everything's corrected by Obama being impeached. And mm-hmm. I think everything's corrected by, you know, public elections or, you know, a whole bunch is corrected by that. Now, where's the middle ground for us? I'm not sure there's a middle ground. I think that there's a meeting of the minds. And in that magic place, if we can actually talk to each other, there's called American ingenuity, and where something can be created that no one thought of before. Really, no one thought of mm-hmm. before. And that has been the secret. America's secret in their pocket has been our ability to do this. And so all these code words and narrative control and talking points and polarization that is so fun for too many media outlets, so much fun and so profitable, is actually the ultimate damper of American ingenuity. So I have a brother who's a local Tea Party member, and I know that he's not a bad guy and that everything he wants is not necessarily a bad thing. But I don't get to know what he thinks in his heart of hearts, because all I get are talking points and all I get are code words. And so even in my own family, I get to practice breaking down these habitual barriers that we've been taught. It's like being taught, you get taught English, you get taught math, you get taught code words, you know, and it's nutty cuckoo if you're not in the same hole. So without meandering too much more, we probably should acknowledge that there's hands up on the board. And I am going to open the mic for area code 513, and I think this might be Laura.
Yeah,
welcome
it
to
is.
Loudon.
I kind of came in a little late, but I guess, I don't know, maybe it's the one guy I follow on Facebook, and maybe I should unfollow him, because it seems like everybody who follows him always ends up saying the same thing. And it's a group of people who seem to think that the only problem we have in this country is government. And if we had absolutely no government and no government regulations, we would have a free market. And if we had a free market, that would resolve every problem the country ever has. And that would be freedom and liberty for all, and there would be absolutely no problems. Because it all would be resolved through the free market.
Okay, so what does that make you think? I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, you know what my mind goes to, and I'm sorry, I know this might be kind of funny because I do have a brain that's kind of wacky sometimes, and I do make people laugh sometimes. I think of the John Wayne movies. You know, I think competitors are going to do everything they can to destroy their competition so that there are no new competitors. I think there's always going to be a bad guy, whether the bad guy's in government or in business. Like, you know, I mean, to say the only bad guy there can ever be is a bad guy in government creating corrupt regulations is just ludicrous.
Well, there's an interesting lead, because you took the characteristics of government into business into government. Let me share you a tiny little story. As you know, Laura, I am a retired business person, and I won my business through competitive bidding. And so on three separate occasions, these were like million-dollar-plus jobs, on three separate occasions, my office was broken into, and I was the victim of industrial espionage.
That's what I'm saying. There's always
Let me finish. Let me finish the story. Every contract I ever won got a Freedom of Information Act request. And so every proposal I ever wrote, if it was to a governmental organization, they had to come to me. I had to make my legal case why my proposal was proprietary. That, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it tied up thousands of dollars of staff time and at my time and just frustrated the heck out of me. And while and these Freedom of Information Act requests were always made through a third party. So you knew it was one of your competitors, but they had some, you know, dumb company in Washington, D.C. that just did this for a living, did Freedom of Information Act requests.
Right.
And it was business harassment. And so I'm kind of with you in the thing of I'm not sure that business left to itself does not become a predator. And I really ultimately what we need to do is say not how, but what. What is it we're trying to accomplish? And so your friend, from what you relayed, wants to accomplish some kind of, what, equilibrium through a free market or, you know, I'm not sure.
It's not an all or nothing thing. It's how do we find the balance? I mean, how do we, I don't think you're ever going to totally get corruption out. There's always going to be corrupt human beings. Just how do we keep it to a minimum?
Well, and I want to chime in here on this because this goes back to what I was talking about in having a culture or society where trust is prevalent. And we've actually come to a place where we have where distrust is more prevalent, where we expect people to try to take advantage of us instead of help us, where we expect our competitors to do everything they can to harass us, where we expect. And that is something that we can only change, each one of us individually. Because to where it becomes not acceptable to as a whole, you know, if we the tribe of the United States say that we are competitive up to this point and we draw a line in the sand and say this is it, after that, you know, we need to, you know, that's where competition stops. We stop at not doing anything illegal. We stop at harassment. We stop and make that just not acceptable in our culture. And I don't know how to do that other than one person at a time.
Yeah, I don't know. Like maybe it's like spreading the love around. I don't know.
I've heard that one before.
Maybe we just gotta make it contagious.
Well, or a new norm. Because remember when Annabelle made her post way back February of 2010 that said, you know, people standing up and screaming at town hall meetings is not the American way. People being disrupted, people disrupting, sabotaging due process. You know,
right.
This is not the standard of civility and reason that we expect from Americans. And so to me, it was un-American behavior. And it's interesting how we've seen evidence between that time and now how somehow being a smarty-pants, loudmouth bully works in some communities. And I don't understand
where we turn the corner. I mean, when I was 5 and we had Jacqueline Kennedy and everything was about being classy and you didn't air your dirty laundry and, you know, and there were bad parts about that. You know, I'm not saying there weren't, and I'm glad the bad parts are, you know, sort of kind of gone and it's permissible now that if you abuse your children, that's not acceptable and something is more acceptable to be done about it than it was back then. But there's some, but it's like we turn the corner too much.
What
you know what I'm saying?
Too much mean?
Yeah, it's like, you know, you've heard the expression TMI, haven't you?
I'm not sure I understood what you just said. Just explain what you want to need to know.
Oh, I don't know why we've gone to the now everything's, we all got to scream and we all got to complain. And there seems to be a lot of fear out there. A lot of what I hear is, I hear a lot of people saying, nobody ever gave me nothing, so why should my tax dollars go to pay for food stamps for somebody else? and this group of people is more deserving than that group, and it's and it's
oh
like,
yeah, yeah,
you know,
okay, I see what you're talking about. And again, I'm wondering, you know, when I talk to people
anymore,
about that.
Now it's, we've got to say what group of what type of people are deserving and what aren't. And, you know, it's not about being a community of people anymore. We don't have class. Now we have to judge people and throw stones and air dirty laundry. And there's no class. There's no finesse. There's... Am I making sense?
Well, you think we have class and finesse, stays way behind. I mean, you're accusing yourself when you said there is none, and I don't think that's true. And I think there's a whole lot of people out there who maintain their own dignity while maintaining the dignity of others. But I have to tell you, when I look back to the 60s and this period of Camelot that everyone wants to think about, the John F. Kennedy era, and what I remember from that time was not how wonderful it was. What I remember from that time is how mean-spirited it was. What I remember is little kids trying to go to school, little kids that look like they're dressed for Sunday school, and they're having rocks thrown at them, and adults are lining the streets and spitting at them, little tiny grade school kids, you know, and never mind when they tried to integrate the university. It was in Alabama, I think. I mean, we saw riot police. We saw young people hosed down with fire hoses. We saw young people attacked by German shepherds. I mean, you want to talk nasty? Nobody today.
In the neighborhood I
nobody
grew up
today
in.
See that kind of nasty. And so it's not like people were nice. They were not nice. But Debbie Lynn talked about how they had people in her parents' community had cocktail parties celebrating the death, the assassination of the president. We have to embrace the idea that yesterday was not all wine and roses. It was not good for women. It was not good for people of color. It was not good for people in poverty. It was not good. It was not – I'm not saying it's all bad.
I'm just saying,
I wouldn't go back there for all the money in the world.
I'm just saying,
I would not have my daughters back there.
The neighborhood that I grew up in, that kind of stuff didn't happen in.
Well, of course it didn't. I mean, the neighborhood I grew up in didn't grow in, happen either. I think there were two black families in my entire city. You know? But we have to admit, honestly, you know, how it is we're brought up, you know, that how you're brought up and how I'm brought up and how someone in Selma, Alabama is brought up is not the same. You know, one of the beauties, we used to consider it the beauty of the American people that is that we were the melting pot and that, you know, you could be Italian Chicagoan, you know, you could be Polish, you'd be in a Polish New Jersey community. I mean, those things. As long as it was very clear that you were first an American, it was all good. It was just the food you ate. But to some people, that's intolerable. To some people then and now, it is still intolerable. And how can I possibly judge you on the basis of whether you eat lutefisk or enchiladas? You know, how could I possibly judge you? I mean, my mother was in high school before she knew that everybody didn't make ravioli for Christmas dinner. She just didn't know.
That's so funny when you consider how popular Tex-Mex and Italian restaurants are. I mean, Chinese, Italian, and Mexican restaurants are probably the three most popular restaurants in at least this area. I don't know about anywhere else.
The beauty here is, the question, perhaps it's the question. Do we actually believe in ourselves as a melting pot? Will we actually allow the many and varied and rich communities and cultures that make up America? Or there's something else that's more appropriate.
So here's like a perfect example of like where do we need to have compassion for folks who have beliefs and values different than ours, different than our own. Mm-hmm. Not to place a value judgment of right or wrong on it, but simply to understand maybe a level of fear that they have. Because, I mean, mm-hmm. I can imagine, you know, having, you know, this very segregated culture set up in the South, and all of a sudden the federal government comes in and tells you, you have to change everything you've ever believed and ever known and everything you ever experienced. And I can see how that would be fearful, how people would be fearful for that.
Uh-huh.
And it's not, you know, especially if they grew up believing, you know, horrible things about African Americans, which, you know, we know now are not true, but at the time they didn't. So how do we in ourselves, with our own hard wiring intact that we're not giving up, how do we show and demonstrate compassion? Because it's through compassion that people open up instead of close down and trench deeper.
Yeah, when you tell somebody you're wrong, you close down their brain. You do. You don't open them up.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, someone raised their hand when you asked that question. So, Laura, thank you so much. I'm going to put you on hold right now for music, for noise, and I'm going to open up area code 707. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon. Who am I speaking with today?
Hi, this is Linda from Northern California.
Linda, hello.
Hi. Well, I was just using my life as an example. I'm originally from South Jersey. My dad was a tomato farmer, so we were poor. We had like 11, there was 11 of us kids. But my family was I think back, and they were very bigoted. And that's what I grew up hearing. That's what I grew up, you know, it was pretty
mm-hmm.
much an all-white community in a suburb because we didn't live on the farm. So I wound up going in the service in 78. Basically, well, we won't go into why, but the experience changed my life, and the reason being, all of a sudden I'm in this isolated little sack. Okay, I call it a sack, and I'm now working with people of all colors, all races, all nationalities. Well, because we even had like Filipinos people in different countries that would work in our military and things like that. So anyway, I'm now exposed to all kinds of things, and it's like, wow, you know, these are really cool people. And then when I go back home on leave and I hear the same garbage, my skin crawls.
Mm-hmm.
Because I now know that's not true. And basically, I think what it took was people like to isolate in little walls, with walls around their little communities. And when I went in service, those walls were gone. I had to interact, whether I liked it or not, and I really didn't care. You know, I don't ever think I was like my family, really. But the thing is you have to knock those walls down because there's so much fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend that's Italian in Northern Jersey, Italian Polish, and as soon as his sister found out I was blonde and I was of English descent, it was like, oh, she's not Italian.
Italian. You could be Northern Italian. That's my family.
So, you know, but anyway, you know, I think that's fixable. But, you know, it's just getting to face-to-face with a person,
mm-hmm.
Talking with them and not having those fear facts.
Right, yeah. Okay. I mean, there's so many people that I've talked to have, you know, whether it's conservatives who finally get exposed to a real live living, breathing liberal, and they figure out that, oh, my God, these people really are patriotic. or whether it's somebody that grew up in a very liberal environment that is exposed to a conservative, and they go, oh, wow, you know, they really care deeply for their family. And they, you know, they do everything they can to support their family. It's amazing the transformation that takes place. And it is hard to deal with people who haven't had that experience. And so I wonder, Linda, how is it for you, you know, and I'm not sure if your family's still around or not, but how is it that, how do you get to show compassion for your family now?
I moved across the state, the country. but, yeah, well, we won't use my family as an example because they're pretty messed up. But I am around in a very small county in Northern California that is probably the only red county in California.
Mm-hmm.
And the pick, you know, Cowtown to the whole Tea Party thing. So how do I deal? I try and talk to people. Like when I call them on the phone, I try and talk to them, and I get, you know, some of the talking points thrown at me, and then I basically try and work around that. As long as neither party is being obnoxious, and you can kind of, you know, talk to them, and I, you know, show them respect, you know, sir, ma'am, you know, the whole bit. But the I think people need to feel respected and heard, and that
mm-hmm.
probably counts for anybody, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, nobody's shouting anybody else down because that's when I turn off. You know, I don't
yeah.
want to be interested.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was sharing with Janine before the show started that, you know, when in these transpartisan gatherings that I've been at before, where we've had, you know, leaders from a lot of big national organizations from across the political spectrum there, we basically start with a couple of questions, and the first question is helping people get their story out. It's like, when did you first become aware of politics in your life? You know, and so I'll share the story of when I was 10 and Nixon resigning. That was, I mean, I remember the 72 election a little bit, but I really remember watching TV when Nixon resigned. I've had other people share stories about that going to Nixon's inauguration and his dad telling him how all the liberals hate their country and they need to be killed. Other people share stories similar to Janine's, you know, being aware of the assassination of Kennedy being the first kind of that turning moment. And it really opens people up to kind of go, oh, that's where you come from. And then there's, you know, a follow-up question that says, what do you think are the most important values of our country? And, you know, and so people start coming up with freedom or independence or justice or, you know, it gets down to about six words that everybody has, six words. And it's incredible because it shows everybody how similar we actually are. And then we move on, you know, to actually have a more political conversation once we have a common understanding of each other.
True. It's very true.
And Debbie Lynn, well, and don't you think, Debbie Lynn, that, you know, being transpartisan does not mean you don't know where you stand. You know what I mean? It's not an airy-fairy,
yeah.
Oh, what do I don't really know what I think about this. I think on the contrary, what you're just pointing to is that, you know, you don't really have to know. You do not have to know where you stand. As long as you're in the comfort zone of those talking points and the code words, and the exercise that you just described allows people to step outside of this comfort place and
mm-hmm.
actually have to explain, well, I agree with that, you know, I feel this way because, and this is who I am, and this is my life experience, and
mm-hmm.
this whatever. And you're right, you know, on a one-to-one basis or in a small group, for sure, you know, things change because of conversation. And
right.
It's totally important to not miss partisan with nowhere to stand. You have anywhere to stand if you're not standing
yeah.
on the soapbox of some particular group or organization.
To me, transpartisan is more an attitude of like, I have these beliefs and I'm going to respect and listen to yours. And then from there, we're going to have a conversation about where do we want to go together. And then we start creating it. It's about, I think, probably more than anything else, transpartisanship for me is about acknowledging the entrenchments that we all have and then stepping beyond them. Let's move out from this trench and go, let's go somewhere together.
Right, and the nuance there that you're pointing to is so much, it's not like let's find middle ground. It's not about middle at all. But it is about common ground. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a patriot. Are you a patriot? What does a patriot mean to you? You know, I believe in, you know, whatever. You believe in whatever. What does this mean to us? You know,
mm-hmm.
Where is our common ground? And I think I cut you off, Linda. I'm sorry.
No, I was just listening. but, yeah, I think that's very true. I think if you were to sit down and if everybody had no colors, you know, as far as, you know, we were all unknown entities to each other, and we just started talking without knowing what this other person was, you would find all those similarities. They don't come into play until, you know, you hear the buzzwords, oh, liberal, Tea Party, this, that, whatever. That's when that's when you start determining this, what this person is that's in front of you.
Yes.
And I don't, you know, I don't know how to break that down short of intermixing. People, once they're around something, you're not fearful of it anymore.
Right.
And I don't, that's the only thing I can think of, because then I go back to, you know, maybe there should be some way where, I know this is going to cause a problem, but like mandatory couple years of either service in the military or service in the Peace Corps or something to get people out of their own little bubble.
Oh, that's brilliant,
you know, that's,
Linda. That's really brilliant. Yeah. And you know what? It's the perfect segue into Debbie Lynn and I want to talk just for a couple of minutes about why we called this show Part 1. And so I want to thank you so much. That brilliant ending, brilliant segue. Thanks so much. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
So we called this, Debbie Lynn and I called this Part 1 because we wanted to open the conversation, sort of have this impromptu conversation about what does this really mean. And during the course of our research, we found that there are certainly folks who have developed the notion of transpartisanship. And one of Debbie Lynn's associates, familiars, whatever you want to call it, has actually broken down the how one organizes transpartisan relationships. And I'm just going to do the outline. Maybe Debbie Lynn wants to say more, but it talks about principles, policies, processes, and mapping the body politic. And to me, the mapping the body politic has to do with just who's out there, what's out there, who am I listening to, how can I be respectful of these many conversations if I don't even know they exist, almost. And so our initial notion was to have a preliminary conversation today, unraveling the knots, a.k.a. mapping the body politic. You want to add a little bit to that before we close, Debbie Lynn?
Well, I think just to one of the things that has been done successfully is helping people from across the political spectrum organize around policy, because
mm-hmm.
That, you know, if we all want the same thing, then our stories behind why we want that thing matter less than the fact that we're going to have a conversation to create something that we want. And this is where, you know, I've played around with this space and with the process space of the two of the four areas that you mentioned the most. And I've seen miracles happen with people's relationships with each other. And I've had them happen for myself. And I just can't help but think that if people are willing to give up being right, which is the price of all of this, for the sake of relating to someone else so that we can reweave this fabric of America, it's the simplest thing, even if it's not easy to do.
Simple but not easy. Mm-hmm. Famous last words, Ms. Molyneux. So thank you, everyone, for an amazing conversation, an amazing part one to our foray into more than saying, not more than saying we're transpartisan, but actually how do we be transpartisan, and what does it take of us personally, and what is it, what kind of knowledge base do we need, what kind of relationship to other people. It's time for me to tell you about Coffee Party Internet Radio. There are other shows besides Lunch with Loudon. On Monday, Dan Arison hosts Press One for Democracy at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, broadcasting out of Portland, Oregon. Our Tuesday show, Middle Ground, is still on hiatus, and if you have an interest in participating in a wonderful conversation between people who may not come from the same place but are looking for the same thing, go to that our website, www.coffeepartyusa.com. Go to volunteer and let us know you're interested in the Middle Ground, which I think should be changed to Common Ground, by the way. Thursdays, of course, Lunch with Loudon, noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. And Saturdays, Egberto Willie's host, Politics Done Right, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Coffee Party USA is a totally grassroots, crowdfunded organization. Citizens United has not benefited us. If you'd like to become a member, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com and find the big red member button. If you'd like to donate rather than become a member, you go to the same website and click on Free the Elected, and we'll get a little thank you gift for making your contribution. Debbie Lynn, I want to thank you for an engaging conversation. I want to thank everyone who participated. Any last words before we coffee party on?
Stay tuned. Part two is coming up.
All right. So we're going to do two things. We're going to update the blog and, for today's show to relate the kind of things that we talked about here. And then if you go to the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page, you're going to see posts between today and our show. Next week is next week, Thanksgiving.
Anyway,
our non-Thanksgiving show and where we're going to post articles and images and things that relate to this particular conversation, and you can always contribute that kind of information, and I'll pass it along. Just go ahead and post it on Lunch with Loudon Facebook page, and we'll share it with the rest. Until then, coffee party on.